Welcome to the Broadcast Sport Podcast. I'm senior reporter Max Miller, and this week I spoke to the ECB, Little Dot and Display about how they turned the Hundreds draft into a digital-first production.
Thanks for having us on. My name's Rob Johnson. I'm the head of digital and content at the Hundred, which is part of the ECB. If you don't know what the Hundred is, hopefully you'll find out pretty soon having listened to this podcast. We're about to go into our fourth season. The new kids on the block, really, from a cricketing perspective, trying to throw the doors open to get new people into cricket. And we're really proud of how we've done that so far. But my role is to be, I guess, responsible for all our fan-facing content on a variety of different owned and operated platforms.
Hi, Peter Cassidy, Commercial Director at Display. So we're an audience engagement and graphics platform, and we help broadcasters, rights holders, football clubs, production companies to add dynamic and interactive graphics to their live broadcasts and live streams.
I'm Fiona Wood. I'm Strategy Director at Little Dot Sport. Little Dot specializes in social media and content production. My role specifically focuses on new business development and business strategies for our clients. We work with about 30 odd different rights holders across sports, and our involvement with the 100 draft is really A, helping build the case study as to why YouTube was the perfect place for it, but also supporting the production elements and the creative elements.
We're here to talk about obviously the 100 draft, which took place earlier this month in March when we're speaking, which for the first time was done across YouTube and kind of digitally. In the past, it'd be on Sky Sport. First question, whoever wants to jump in, what are the benefits of doing it digitally? Does it allow you to reach more viewers? Does it allow you to reach a different demographic?
For us, the 100 at its heart has always intended to be a digital first competition. And we've done that in loads of different ways, from kind of ticketing to TikTok, to be honest. But from a cricketing perspective, the 100 draft, which happened this time for the, I think, fifth time we've done it, is a really key part of our kind of cricketing infrastructure. It's how we pick our squads, right? So it's a really interesting and kind of important part of that. We were the first UK sport to run a draft. It's very popular, you know, in America, NFL draft's renowned, but we were the first in the UK to do something like this. So it's always felt like it should be a digital property, and it probably always has been in some way, shape or form. But on this occasion, we had a unique opportunity to really own that bit of news ourselves. And I think it was 2 months before we did the actual live show last week, we sat in the Sage office. Sage, it is the 100 draft powered by Sage. They're our commercial partner associated with this part of the 100. And we sat in their office at the Shard and pitched them the opportunity. Could we build a TV show in their office at the Shard and do a two-hour live show on our own terms and have complete creative control? So to be able to do that digitally and kind of pitch that to those guys, they were up for it, and then look at how we actually piece that together operationally has been a lot of fun. But yeah, we've always said we're a digital cricket competition at our heart. So this was a good opportunity to put that into practice.
Fiona, Little Dot obviously specialise across a lot of YouTube content and digital content. So what do you guys bring into it? How did you kind of work with UCP?
Yeah, so it was when Rob brought the idea to us, one of the key things that we had to think about was, you know, the purpose of the draft as well. And we were really mindful of that. We wanted to leverage the 100 draft to really prime the addressable audience in what will be the 100 spring rebuy window. So, you know, people who have been to the 100 before, they want to buy tickets again. This is such a good opportunity to re-engage with that slightly, I would say, higher affinity audience with the 100. So that was really key for us going into this. It had to be, you know, something that was appealing to quite a range of different people, but equally, you know, at its essence, it's still cricket and it's still a draft at the end of the day. So it also had to appeal to audiences who would really connect with something like a draft. You know, from our point of view, we were really keen to recommend YouTube as a platform for the draft. YouTube as a platform, by far compared to other social platforms, has the longest watch time by a lot longer than, say, your vertical video outputs. The other side to YouTube as well is that the analytics are fantastic. So you can really see who's engaging, you know, how many viewers are watching at any given time, what the best time to go live would be in the UK. We're able to look at that data and say to Rob and the team, you know, in the UK at 5 p.m., that's when you're going to get your most engaged audiences. As it happened, that's when the show was. So it worked out really well. I think the other side of it as well is we also went live on TikTok. That was a really interesting thing for us to do because TikTok as a channel isn't used as a second screen. So it was a really good opportunity to tap into an audience group who are going to be super, super engaged.
Was that, well, obviously you targeted YouTube and TikTok and things like that. Was there any other thoughts about Facebook, about Snapchat, about the other platforms as well?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, that's something we might ponder for next time. That there's certainly other places this could live. One of the big targets for us was to drive traffic to the 100.com website. So we actually were embedding the stream there as well. So if you looked at our social output across the other platforms, they were all used to point people towards the 100.com. And then, you know, that strategically really important for us. And the good news is that we saw 173% uplift on how many page views we got on the 100.com. So that part of the puzzle was a big success. You can use all the different ecosystem of channels in different ways, but I think Fee's right. YouTube was the first port of call for this as a project. And it was a nice experiment to try something on TikTok as well.
Peter, Display obviously work across both broadcast and digital. For you guys coming in, what's the difference, I guess? How do you approach it differently? Or is it you making it in the same kind of way graphics wise?
Yeah, I think there's probably two big differences that we see. One is that obviously there's a set of constraints that you don't have necessarily because you're not on broadcast TV. And that allows you a little bit more flexibility and freedom, even if it's to do with when you start and when you stop. And maybe the tone sometimes of what you're able to produce is a little bit different, a little bit more playful and fun. Not always. I mean, TV can be playful and fun as well, but there's just something about digital platforms that lend themselves to, you know, a slightly more informal tone. So I think there's that. And then the other big one, obviously, that is why people tend to use our platform for this stuff is that it's naturally interactive, right? So the interactivity is kind of baked in because you've got a chat going on the side. People just naturally want to participate and they feel because it's on a digital platform, they're much closer to what's actually happening. If you're really determined to bring that interactivity out, which Rob was absolutely determined to do from the beginning, then it's just a great way to do it because then fans see, oh, I chat. And they're actually picking up some of the chat and putting it in graphics, then it kind of makes, I think, the whole thing feel a little bit more like a community event and a fan-led event. And then it also means that like calls to action, like Rob said, to go buy tickets, go to the website or whatever, are just that little bit more effective than they would be if it was from broadcast TV.
Then in terms of actually producing it, though, what was the setup? It obviously took place at Sage's offices, I believe, the sponsor. So what were the challenges around that? It's obviously not a traditional studio space.
It's a good question. And you know, building a TV studio at Western Europe's biggest building was something we'd never done before. So we were really starting from a blank sheet of paper as the ECB and as the 100. We'd got, you know, various experience in lots of different areas, but this felt like something new for us. So it was important to sit down with the guys at Little Dot to gain some understanding of their experience of other live shows. And we took a lot of inspiration from other sports, other things that we'd seen, be that the Football Association, or we spoke to Manchester City actually in detail about how they operate in a live environment. And we reached out to a number of other sports. We talked to the RFU, for example. So we tried to get our feelers out to understand how to go about this. And then we sat down with Fee's team at Little Dot and started to build a project plan. And very quickly, that then led to conversations with Peter and Display.
Peter, go on. How did those conversations go?
I think Rob came and told us, and we knew the guys at Little Dot already as well. So had various discussions with Alex, who's the exec producer over at Little Dot. And we'd been kind of talking about, we were really hoping that an opportunity would come along where somebody exactly like the ECB would take a live event like that and really push to make it as interactive as possible. And that's what Rob came and said a few weeks before, which was like music to our ears. So I think creatively, we were just like super excited about it. Our approach to it then, because it's that kind of digital from a graphics perspective, there's some things that are different. The first thing is probably graphically, you know, things tend to be bigger and bolder, you know, because you have to take into account different screen sizes and people watching on their phones and laptops and so on. And it's less about the 3D animations that you might see on your massive TV. And it's more about presenting things in a big, bold, clear manner. The second thing was that it should be as dynamic as possible. And that was something that came through from Rob as well. We want like lots of information on the screen all the time, keep people engaged so they can dip in and out. And so there's lots of things happening, not just talking heads. So that's, you know, if you look at it, you see big L bar and it's constantly changing and moving and so on. So that dynamism of information is also slightly different. And then, yeah, to repeat the point, the interactive part. So making sure there's the comments and content or photos or questions from the audience are being presented in the graphics as well. And that's actually not just being shown as an add-on, like it's, oh, look at it here on the side, but it's actually driving the narrative and what's being discussed in the show. And I think that was done really well by the Little Dot and the ECB teams together.
And it was really important, you know, from a cricketing perspective, I think we had 75 draft picks to fill, but we had 885 players who were up for grabs. So there was a lot of variables in play and kind of trying to ensure that we're able to present the information. We've got 8 teams and 16 squads. Who's in each squad as that developed was really important. And I think at the very beginning of the process on the ECB side, we did a couple of sessions with our wider kind of team across the whole of the 100 to kind of have a real think through what we would want from a live show and a live offering. And it was fascinating, actually, that when you look at the sort of verbatims of everything that went into those workshops, it kind of translated 3 months later. They happened in December. And then when we did this last week, you actually saw the talent on screen were the people that we'd earmarked as people that felt right for us. The kind of graphics and the interactive element was really important to us. We wanted to have a two-way conversation with the fans. And all of those, it's great that all of those little pieces of the puzzle that we identified in December across all of our kind of wider team all came to fruition when we actually got up the shard and did the show.
Fiona, obviously you guys were involved with all of that planning as well. So what was your input? How did you try to make it as interactive as possible and get people involved?
Yeah, so I think it's probably worth just giving an overview of actually the production setup itself. This space in the Shard was it was essentially an office that we were having to work within. So it was a very different filming space, like really, really interesting space to work with. So we had 4 filming locations and a live gallery. And there were essentially 2 camera teams across these 4 locations. So we were able to use a roaming camera and a fixed camera essentially to cover these 2 crews. We also worked with our other production partner, Limitless. They were essentially the engineers. They pushed the broadcast live and they were there, you know, managing the on-site gallery. Every floor manager, camera op, the talent, everyone had an earpiece so the director could speak to them. So as the draft was developing, we were able to tell everyone who needed to be where, when. We had multiple runners just literally running up and down the office, dragging talent from one setup to the other. So it was a really sort of dynamic, fluid production that was happening. So full credit to all of the production team who were able to stay relaxed through all of that. And then I think just, you know, on top of that, so I think it added to that fluidity, it added to the excitement, and then combining that with something like display, you know, which we're able to build out some of the graphics beforehand, have the templates, update them as the night unfolded, include sort of that social interaction, let the presenters know what's on screen so they could then, you know, in real time say, oh, you know, so-and-so has just said this across social media. Isn't that fantastic? I think the whole thing just created this wonderful, fluid and really exciting live show.
Well, obviously, it seems like there's 2 sides to this. How do you balance between people who are interacting and sending in questions and stuff coming from social media and the draft itself, where I'm assuming there's a lot of stressed out club coaches and stuff trying to work out who they're going to be playing with in a few months?
Yeah, that's right. And we were keen to take from the 2023 draft and the various drafts that we'd done prior to that. We'd done 2 in COVID where we'd had to do them completely remotely behind closed doors. And we'd done one that was live at Sky Sports that was a big kind of opening show at the very beginning of the 100. So we've tried to do the draft in different ways at different times and for different reasons. This was the one from my perspective that really felt like it was ours, and we kind of put the 100 brand at the forefront. And that was really the ambition from us, which was to really kind of, first of all, make it simple to follow. It was quite interesting that after the 2023 draft, we were criticized, actually, that it was quite hard to follow, in particular by the Tailenders podcast. Greg James and co absolutely rinsed us for how difficult it was to follow. So it was kind of quite nice that we were able to invite them to the Shard and actually get them on the settees at the show this time around. So I think it showed that we'd come some way to solving that problem and making it simple to understand. And it was great to have them on set on the night to kind of close that loop completely.
Obviously, the Hundreds hopes to be good for cricket fans as well, but trying to draw new people to the sport. So how were you both appealing to them and getting them to watch, but also informing them of what's actually happening?
Yeah, look, in general terms, the 100 is very much a gateway into cricket for people who might not have considered cricket as being kind of right for them. And when we got to the kind of planning phase of why would we do the 100 at the very beginning, kind of 4 or 5 years ago, it was clear, audience research was very clear that there was some perceptions around cricket that we needed to overcome. It was perceived to be long and slow and complicated and exclusive. So the 100 by design has always been trying to throw the doors open, to simplify it, to speed it up, and to appeal to wider demographic across the seven cities and on broadcast. If you come to a 100 game, I think that pretty much hits you in the face as soon as you arrive, that it's bright, it's colourful, it's easy to follow, and that it's a different clientele that are walking through the gates. So that's really exciting for us, that we're seeing more families, we're seeing more kids, we're seeing more female fans. And it's really, really important that all of our fan-facing output, be that on social channels, be it this kind of project, has to fully reflect. That was the thing for this. We wanted that show, that 2-hour show, to kind of give you a glimpse of to what the 100's all about. So that's why we had Abby McCarthy, who's one of our stadium DJs. We had her there. We actually turned the reception desk at Sage's office into a DJ booth, fully branded as the 100. It's why we had both the cricket experts like Nasser Hussain and Ebony Rainford-Brent and Charles Dagnall, balanced by having the likes of Tailenders or by having kind of hosts that we're familiar with as the 100. So we used Kenzie Benali and Nick Bright as our kind of hosts for this show. They are in bowl hosts at Southern Brave and Oval Invincibles, so we're very familiar with them. They're kind of part of the 100 family. So it did feel like our thing from a brand perspective, and hopefully we were able, using kind of pre-prepared content and VTs, to sort of showcase the wider spectacle and intensity that you get with the 100, both from a cricketing perspective, but also the likes of the live music and the event experience. And it's probably worth saying, actually, that from our perspective, sat next to the director from Little Dot, who was called Phil, was another guy called Phil from our side, who is head of event production for ECB. So he's used to delivering big stadium events from a cricketing perspective. He kind of took that knowledge and took that sort of ability to deliver a show and transferred that into delivering a live broadcast show using the same kind of knowledge. And I thought that was really cool to see how that worked out. And we couldn't have done it without him. He was absolutely pivotal to delivering what we did.
Mm-hmm. And well, Fiona is obviously shared between you guys, the two fields running everything. So how did, from your side of things, how did you play into that?
From our side, the first and foremost thing is that we didn't want the stream to go down. So we made sure we went into this like fully safeguarded, contingency plans, massive list. If this happens, then we do this. If this happens, then we do that. Alex, our executive producer, I think did an incredible job at essentially connecting everyone who needed to be connected across Display, across the ECB, across, you know, people at Sage. Like at one point we did have an issue with the Shard's firewall. And we couldn't actually, when in our test, we couldn't go live because of that firewall. So it's, you know, sort of uncovering some of those challenges through testing before actually going live was really, really integral to getting this right. And even when we push live to TikTok, because you can't preset TikTok lives, if you were on the Wi-Fi in the Shard building, you couldn't actually see it because of a different firewall. So there's all these fun challenges that sort of crop up. But what I thought was really amazing watching it all happen is, you know, nobody panicked. Everyone worked together so well to create this incredible product. And I genuinely can't wait to see what happens next year, because I just think it will go from strength to strength.
Peter, for you guys, obviously, graphics vitally important for making sure people understand what's happening. So how did you make sure that the viewers understood?
Well, I think we had to lean a lot on Rob and the rest of the guys at the ECB, who obviously deeply understand the process in a way that we tried to get our head around, and it is quite complex. And we got there in the end, and there was quite a lot of complexity, as you can imagine, in surfacing player picks and team selections really quickly in graphics. That was quite complex, and I'm happy that that it all worked. And I think we came away from it, first of all, genuinely excited because we thought it looked great, and secondly, buzzing with ideas about how we could make it even easier and better next time. It's like always with these one-off events, some of our other customers, you know, they do a show every week, and so you're just every week they're learning from last week and they're improving a little bit, whereas this is this one-off thing, right? Then you got to get it right, and I think did get it right, but then you're also come away from it going, oh, how can we make it even better next time? You know, I think there's certain things we could do. We wanted to do more polling in graphic in addition to the comments and photos. So that's definitely something we could add, or, you know, that kind of direct interactivity, for example, would be something that we could look at next time.
Visually, to get people to watch it, obviously on YouTube, it's so important to have that eye-catching kind of either the original image that you're going to see or when it's actually playing to keep people interested. So across the graphics and across other aspects, how did you try to, well, you were mentioning obviously the bright colours, the branding and things like that, but how did you make sure people, you know, clicked on it originally?
We were keen that anything you saw on screen from a graphics perspective was entirely on brand with everything else that we do. And that's something the 100 takes a lot of time and effort over. But we've been keen to build a fan base over the last 4 years that we can, you know, tap into at the right moments. This was probably, Fee alluded to our kind of prime phase, which is kind of this part of the year where we're trying to reignite interest with fans that have come to the 100 previously. Probably more so than trying to get the new ones in. That happens sort of closer to the tournament. So we're confident that we can reach those fans at this time of year. And it's the third kind of chapter in parts of that phase. We first of all tell everyone about the fixtures, who's going to be playing where on which date. Then we do our retention, player retention day, where we show who's staying at each squad. And then that is the precursor to the draft, where we pick the rest of the players, or the teams go and pick the rest of their players. So we've been continually creating this drumbeat of information, and it's all been building to that moment last Wednesday. So it's kind of, it doesn't just turn on overnight. It's a kind of gradual process, and trying to make sure that we're reaching the right fans as well, that we're reaching fans who are people that came to the 100 last year, who are likely to buy a season ticket or a one-off ticket to come and watch some cricket this time around. So it isn't just a one-stop shop. It's part of a much bigger plan.
Fiona is obviously Little Dot's input into that as well as digital partners and production partners. How do you guys make sure that all gets out on time, make sure it's all building up to that kind of crescendo?
I mean, what's great about working with the ECB is there's very clear content plans. The brand is really, really clear. So if a user happens to watch any content from the 100, it's immediately clear who it is. The tone of voice is really clear. So we were really stringent with all of that. I think, you know, one of the benefits of YouTube particularly is if you are more of an avid fan and you're on YouTube, you can turn on notifications to sort of say when this live stream is going live. And what's great about YouTube as well, you can also track notifications. So you could actually see how many people did do that, and you can look at ways to sort of double down on that for future drafts as well. Thinking about what we could also do in the future, if we wanted to, YouTube have recently released a feature called Live Reject Direct. And you can actually now stream live from YouTube Shorts and then directly connect to the main live stream. So something like having a key creator go live on Shorts, sort of prepping almost the draft and then redirecting over. It's just another lever we could think about pulling next year. But there's probably, you know, so many more we could think about as well as this develops.
And well, already mentioned it a few times. Yeah. So next year, what kind of new plans will you be bringing in? Have you got any ideas already? Are you even thinking about doing other kind of digital-only events as well, in addition to the draft?
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? I think this is really kind of wet the whistle for the tournament in 2024 in terms of understanding who's going to be playing with each team. And the draft is this sort of important milestone. I'll be honest, we need to sit down and interrogate what we've done last week and really, really consider what worked and what we can improve on and what we can expand on. And we, you know, we will do that job before we start thinking about next year. But I think the general feeling was we'll continue to want to own it as our thing. You don't know until you actually do something what's required and what you can get from it. And we learned so much from this project. So we're really excited to think about the next one, but we probably need to fully interrogate this before we get to that. But yeah, it's been so much fun to pull it together. And like I said, until you actually do something like this, you've got no real comprehension of what's required. So it's been a massive learning curve for a whole bunch of us, really.
Very good to think about it first. And Peter, you obviously mentioned the polls and other additional interactivity that we brought in next year. Is there anything else kind of from display side that you're thinking of? I mean, 12 months is a long time in technology, but it's what else could be there?
Yeah, who knows what we'll be able to cook up. I mean, I think what's interesting to us is that this is a really good example of something of a trend that we're observing around sports particularly, in that the event itself or the, you know, the match or the game or whatever obviously tends to, for economic and lots of other reasons, stay in linear broadcast, whether that's OTT or otherwise. And that will probably remain the case for those economic reasons. But what we're seeing is a kind of proliferation of digital live stream. Usually what was around it digitally was usually just on-demand clips or that kind of thing. But what we're seeing is that live is now becoming part of the periphery around these events, and it could be something like this, which is a draft. We do something similar for UFC, where they do a digital first weigh-in before the fight on YouTube for TNT, or for others where they do watch-alongs with an event. So the watch-along is being streamed in parallel, because who knew people actually like watching a main broadcast and another video feed at the same time. And so what you're finding is all these different forms of live content, which have freedom that the main broadcast doesn't have, to give a fan's perspective, to be more informal, to be more interactive, to show more data is another big one, right? So you've got all that real estate and you can dive a little bit deeper into the data than you can sometimes on the main broadcast. So we're just excited about this whole space generally. And as for what might be in the draft next year, if Rob asks us to come back, then let's wait and see.
Fiona, again, similarly to technology, 12 months is a long time to be thinking ahead in terms of social platforms. But what kind of things do you think potentially could be added in?
I think what Rob and the guys have created is a really valuable asset. You know, it's definitely going to be mentioned in the same breath as, you know, Lion's Den, Lionesses Live, which has always been sort of a pillar where everyone's wanted to reach to. And I think they really have genuinely created that. And I think, you know, not only has it engaged with audiences and been a great production, I think for Sage as the commercial partner, you know, the sponsor of the draft, it's a brilliant asset for them as well. And, you know, I think there's even more Sage could probably do around YouTube in particular, around things like direct ad sales or dynamic ad insertions, or, you know, not to take away from the editorial part of the draft, but, you know, a sponsored section. And this in its own right could become a really valuable commercial asset that ultimately could just wash its own face because a commercial partner wants to be connected with it because of all the brilliant things that it does. So for me, that's where I would love to see, you know, this asset go to, you know, become really valuable beyond just the 100 itself and become something within the sports industry that's really held up as, you know, the right way to create something really valuable.
Thanks for listening to the Broadcast Sport podcast. You can find more of our content at broadcastnow.co.uk/broadcast-sport. Meanwhile, make sure to subscribe and we'll see you for the next one.